papers 25 and 25A and 25B. Paper 25A addresses the issue of distinction between changes in accounting policies and changes in accounting estimates. Paper 25B addresses additional disclosure requirements for changes in accounting estimates, i.e. whether we state anything, so I say it. Both issues originated at the IFRS Interpretation Committee. In September 2014, the issues were added to the board's agenda. So they have been on the board's agenda for quite a while now. Starting with paper 25A, distinction between changes in accounting policies and accounting estimates. A simple example of a change in accounting policy would be measuring PP&E either depreciated cost or revalued amount. A simple example of a change in accounting estimate would be revising estimated useful lives for those PP&E items. There are, however, situations where the answers are not that simple. How do we draw a distinction between changes in accounting policies and changes in accounting estimates in those situations? It would be nice if we could have a simple answer and could say, for example, that one change involves judgment and another change only involves new information. However, both types of changes involve judgment, and both types of changes involve new information, and therefore this distinction does not work. We also tried to use a kind of residual approach last year when we came to the board in May 2015. The residual approach, or kind of residual approach, was if this change is not a change in the measurement basis, this is a change in accounting estimate. The practical problem that the board has actually identified during the meeting and then we explored further was how to identify the starting point, i.e. the measurement basis. Therefore, in the end, the staff have concluded that the only way to clarify the distinction was to step back from the changes and to look at accounting policies and accounting estimates and how they relate to each other. Assuming the board wants to proceed with the amendments, we recommend on paper 25A that it should be amended as follows. Firstly, clarify how accounting policies and accounting estimates relate to each other. As the paper says, an accounting policy is the end, and an accounting estimate is a way of achieving that end when estimation uncertainties exist. Secondly, clarify the definitions of accounting policies and changes in accounting estimates with the objective of making them more concise and distinctive. Thirdly, add guidance about whether changes in manipulation and estimation techniques are changes in accounting estimates. And finally, update examples of accounting estimates provided in ISA. I would like to add, in conclusion, that this distinction issue is important not only for preparers of the financial statements, but also for the board in its standard setting activities. More specifically, it is too important for the board to know whether a change represents an accounting policy or an accounting estimate when the board sets up transitional provisions for its various new guidance. So this was paper 25A. Paper 25B, just a short introduction. This paper focuses on whether additional disclosures should be added in IS 8 in relation to accounting estimates. The paper also includes an analysis of existing disclosure requirements and, across IFRS standards. The staff now recommend not adding any new disclosure requirements to IS 8. This is because we believe that IFRS standards already require a sufficient volume of disclosure requirements for accounting estimates.
Okay, so let's open the floor on 25A.
Do you want to talk about accounting policies separate from estimates or together? Or?
Well, I think do it together.
Yeah, okay. So I think the general direction I agree with, and I agree with where you landed in terms of where you landed on the examples that you had in the appendix as well. So I think it's moving in the right direction. I had a couple of specific comments on your proposed words in paragraph 17. So on accounting policies, I agree with the sort of general move towards making it narrower and a bit more clear what's captured. But I wonder if we've gone a little bit too far, and I'll give you an example of why. So at the moment we've only got in here principles, which I think people would read as being quite a high level thing, and the sort of thing that I wonder if we would mean to include, but where people might wonder if it was included. Somebody gave me a real example was, I understand that utility companies that provide electricity might have policies where they decide, you know, if they replace X kilometres of wire in their grid, that's repairs and maintenance, and if it's longer than that, then that's an acquisition of PP&E, which is really like a sort of allocation type question. Now, I think that we'd want that to be considered a policy because it could have an effect on consistency, et cetera, et cetera. Trying to estimate something, they're making a decision on where something, you know, crosses the line between repairs and maintenance and an acquisition. I don't think I'd think that was a principle. I might think it was a practice. So I think maybe we need to say specific principles and other practices to capture those sorts of allocation type decisions, which I think are still different to an estimate. And I think even when we use the word accounting policies ourselves to refer to what we do in IAS 8, when we talk about a change in accounting policies and what we say about it, much as I'd love everything we write to be principles, I think we do lots of things that are probably more like practices. So I think I like what you've got, but I think it's a little bit too narrow. So I'd say principles and other practices, personally. On changes in accounting estimates, I like generally what you've done here, but again, I wonder whether we've been a little bit too brutal with our cut of words, and I'll give you an example. One would be if my change in accounting estimate was to do with changing the period of time over which I might depreciate an asset. That wouldn't change the carrying amount today, but it would in the future. And so I think maybe these words about periodic consumption of an asset might still be something we need to capture to catch that type of example, which I think we would think was a change in accounting estimate. The last one I just wanted to comment on, 34A, while I've got the floor. I think I generally sort of agree with what you've got here. My only question would be, I think the sentence you've got in here about a change in an estimate where the resulting measure is equally or more representative of the amount being estimated, which was sort of borrowed and adapted from what we've got in IFRS 13. I wonder if it works a little bit better in IFRS 13 because we're very clear about what the measurement objective is there. If I was to transport myself to expected credit loss land, I think people are allowed to make changes in the way that they approach their measurement, etc. It's less clear of whether or not it would be equally or more representative of the amount being estimated because it's a little bit less, it's a more of a squidgy number. And I wonder whether, given that if I look at other places where I've got changes of estimates and I'll think of expected credit losses again, whether we create a potential for conflict between the requirements that we've established in IFRS 9 and what they can do there as long as they meet the measurement objective, if I start to impose something general in IAS 8 about when you're allowed to make changes in estimates, and whether we could create tensions between more specific requirements elsewhere and this in IAS 8 if we were to put it in here. So I'm not sure whether I personally would go so far as to put this extra steer in here. Unless, of course, I guess we remembered every time we wanted to override it, we could say, ignore this paragraph when you're reading IFRS 9, I guess. But I think it will create a few overlaps and tensions.
Pat?
While I'm generally in favour of innovation and new ideas, I would not support going forward with this at this time without substantially more research and input. You mentioned the length of the time we've had this on our agenda. I didn't see any in the paper, a discussion or outreach with CMAQ, for example, or investors, unless I overlooked that. So that's one thing that I'd be curious about their reaction to this. I don't see an overall level of improvement as a result of streamlining language. And I just can't foresee completely what all the unintended consequences may be. But in practice, where this issue became a hard decision based on my memory, wasn't so much distinguishing principles from, you know, estimates, like a change in depreciation, straight line, accelerated, or a change in accounting principle, cost to fair value. In my mind, the gray line was more in the application of a principle. The change in the application of the principle a change in estimate, or is it more of a complete change in principle? And we have some bright lines in the appendices where we talk about inventories and other situations. So without enumerating all those, which I think generally we want to avoid, it's sometimes difficult to make that cut. So I just don't, I'm not feeling exuberant about this simply because I don't see significant value here. Now, you talk about the disclosures in the subsequent paper, and generally speaking, today, if you change an estimate, you're going to get a current period effect. So if you change depreciation, you'd say, okay, depreciation would have been this, and now it's this, and that's good, and people can model that going forward. So I don't think there's any loss of information there. So at the end of the day, where's the real value here? Is it streamlining language? I'm finding it difficult to put my finger on what it is that we're getting out of this. Other than there's the perception by, you know, some preparers that they have to do too much work in certain areas, i.e. restating results when they don't think it's necessary. And you haven't brought us a whole lot of those examples and those situations here that we could sink our teeth in and say, gee, you know, that's a reasonable position or it's not a reasonable position. So I'm dubious without doing more work. I mean, it's easy to say just stop, but I'm also open to you doing more research and bringing it to the board and then presenting that information to the CMEC as well, or as other, you know, investor groups to see what they think. But it's really in that application of accounting principles where I'd like to see a little bit more analysis to distinguish what you think is a change in estimate versus a change in accounting principle.
Do you have an example?
Yeah.
Well, you know, today in IFRS 13, if you change inputs, assumptions, that's considered to be a change in estimate. But, you know, the way I actually apply fair value may be different if I go from an income approach to a DCF approach to a sales approach. You know, and are those changes in estimates, or is that a change in the application of the way I'm coming up with fair value? You know, asking a third party to appraise a CGU or a business. And I think that's a gray area. You might say, well, it's still all fair value, but I don't know. Because value in use versus fair value less cost to sell, in my mind, could be two different objectives. Two different principles.
I thought those were changes in estimates.
Yeah. That's what IFRS 13 explicitly says.
Yeah, I know. So, but what I'm saying is there could be other areas today where those things are deemed to be changes in accounting principle. I don't know all of them.
I thought that the sort of genesis of this project, if you like, was that we were bought a bunch of examples where there had not been consistent interpretation of. And that was perhaps a year ago that we looked at that paper. What was interesting about that paper is I looked through the list and thought I know the answer to every one of these, and then compared my answers with somebody else, and they also knew the answers to every one of them, but they were different. And I think that was exactly what we were trying to resolve. And Pat raises CMEC. I'm not sure CMEC is the correct body here, because this is not about, I think what we're trying to address here is diversity of practice. And the streamlining of the words, ideally, addresses the diversity of practice by making the words clearer. And perhaps subject to what Sue said, I think the clarity of the words is important. The subject to the changes Sue was suggesting, I think the clarity is what we're trying to achieve here.
So can we just show those examples?
That's what I was going to
say. And line them up against the new language and show exactly how the new language illustrates very clearly how you would deal with those situations.
I think to that point, I think it would be important possibly to do that internally, just to take those same examples and say, if I were now thinking about them in the context here, and then possibly to look at, if we're going to test it, to look at somebody like the GPF, because they are the guys that will be interpreting. You're looking at the preparer interpretation rather than necessarily, and maybe the disclosure question is the question for CMAQ, but it's the interpretation question, which is the one that we're interested in here, I think, which is perhaps more a GPF approach. But I think it might also be worthwhile in any document we put out, actually giving some of those examples so that people understand what the problem is we're trying to fix, and then you can sort of, people can sort of interpret in that context.
As you know, I mean, I'm happy with the direction of travel that we're going here too, and it's, there's not going to be any perfect solution or endpoint that solves all the problems. I think this moves the process forward. It brings back lots of examples and memories from wrestling what's an estimate versus a principle versus a change in fact and circumstances. But before I get to the substantive point, just one or two, you know, housekeeping things. We keep talking about accounting policies. I would suggest in future papers for this purpose, probably say accounting principles. And preparer speak policies is lots of administrative procedures. It's the estimation techniques. It's broader than I think you intend it to be. I would just suggest we refer to them as accounting principles. And I think that's understood that it's something, you know, standards and arrangements.
Defined terms accounting policy. So you're suggesting we change the defined terms?
Just for purposes of this, I think accounting principles, this is a change in principle versus an estimate. In prepare, a policy is a broader definition if you're thinking it as a preparer. Your estimation techniques is probably an internal policy because your summary of significant accounting policies and becoming. A lot of it is details of your estimation process, not just I'm under, you know, under FIFO versus LIFO over in the U.S. or something.
Expense all CapEx under 1,000.
Yeah, I mean, that's a policy in preparer side of the table. You know, with just an internal policy. It's not substantive. It's just, they think, for ease of readability by people than ourselves.
So what's the consequence of that?
Well, it's just a readability. There's no consequence. It's just to make the papers read a little bit easier, to my way of thinking.
I don't think it's going to make it more readable. I think it will confuse the outside world.
I disagree with you.
It's been the defined term in IFRS for 40 years, and I think if we suddenly start dropping it into a paper now, nobody will know what's happening.
We write these papers for people other than ourselves. But I'm making a big deal of it. I'm just saying, to me, a policy is a broader definition than an accounting principle. Anyways, since that didn't go over so well, hopefully. The rest of what I have to say lands a little bit better. I think in... if I had my preference and could write this and have it go through, I would probably keep biased towards fewer accounting principles or, I guess, policy changes and biased towards more things or estimate changes versus policy changes. I think that's sort of where you're going on it. If I had to define what I think should be the subset of things that are accounting principle changes would be certainly any change we require. At a future standard, we could define, you know, from what past practice is, or when we provide options in existing standards and you go from one to the other, I would think that's probably a policy change. But more broadly, if your endpoint measure is predominantly cost based versus predominantly fair value based, you know, you just make that change. Either because required or permitted, or because we're silent and you make that choice, I think that's a policy change. Once you get beyond that, it starts getting murky very quickly. You know, an estimate versus a policy versus a change in fact and circumstance. So, acknowledging, you know, Pat said all prepares concerned about the cost of restating. Well, that's a real cost, and it's not just the process cost of doing it. It's your sell-side analysts that follow you resetting their models, which I can assure you they don't like to do, you know, especially for smaller stuff. There's preferability letters and a different set of disclosures. So it's a substantial cost if you're the person doing it. Maybe it's an important cost to be borne some of the times, but a lot of the stuff isn't necessarily so profound, you know, it's really all the effort's really worth it. So if you take a situation where a company has got And fixed asset depreciation is the easiest, is an easy one to visualize. That's why we tend to use it, but it illustrates the issue. If you've got a straight line method of depreciating fixed assets, and along the way you decide I'm going to go to a sum of the year's digits, or I buy another set of class of assets that doesn't really follow a straight line model, but for that subset I go to some form of accelerated method. Is that a change in principle, or is it a new principle, like a new facts? Or am I just changing my value and use period as it declines? The answer is it's all the above. And I do appreciate here, we say, when it's unclear, we go to a change in estimate, and I support that. I just think we need to be clear about what's unclear about it. And I think a year or more ago at a small group meeting, you had examples. There's 10 or 15 examples. I made the comment then. I said, if it was given to all the board members, I guarantee we wouldn't be unanimous in scoring these things. And if we're having trouble with it, there's a much bigger world out there. So my bias net is more should be viewed as estimates than policy changes.
Martin?
Well, I agree that maybe could provide more clarity about this distinction, but I'm really also of the view of the staff member in 24 that is it really sufficient enough to do now a separate ED on that and change all that. And of course, are really our constituents with these things, and I don't think that we should do it now. Maybe if we do in the future, do more work on IRS 8, maybe we incorporate that then and doing that, because I think, and as I've said earlier also in this meeting, I think I have never understood why we really distinguish between change in policy and change in estimate. I think what is really relevant, if that change is significant, then the users have to be informed about of that, and you could do it either by restatement.
Regulators and auditors and investors, and there's quite a variety of people. But as you keep picking up, and Martin specifically talked about this, this is not an ideal solution, and I'm happy to admit it. But this is as far as we could take this project, because IS8 is, first of all, it's an old standard, and secondly, it's cross-cutting standard that should accommodate all scenarios and all other standards. And that's the, we believe that that's the best we could have done in those circumstances. As I said, it's not ideal, but and if you think it's not sufficient, not fair enough, I'm sensing there are two directions. Some people just say stop, and some people just still want us to explore and test our proposals a little bit more, but probably I'm preempting a little bit. So, but they just want to respond to that point in terms of outreach. We did do some outreach, including regulates.
Stephen.
I'm not quite sure why it's not ideal, because I like it.
That's good. It's not that long, it sounds that it's not definitive and all.
I mean, I think it's the right answer. I think we should expose it. I think it's responsive to a request from a regulator. They have concerns about diversity in practice. Is the FIFO average cost a policy or an estimate? This answers that question. I think it gives the right answer to the question. I certainly don't think we should adjust prior years for changes in estimates. The whole process of accounting is one of truing up on an ongoing basis, and to lose changes in estimates in prior years would, I think, be completely unacceptable. So I think we should go ahead.
Thank you.
Mary?
I also think we should go ahead, but I think some of the questions, concerns about is this enough of an improvement, et cetera, should make us think creatively about things, as you have done in here, about don't put it out on its own. Think about bundling it with the AIPs. Maybe Martin's suggestion about what's the next time that we, what's a realistic estimate of the next time we think we're looking at IS8. I don't think I would hold it for 3 or 4 years. But but if it's sooner than that, maybe think about that as the alternative, because I think this is not the kind of major breakthrough that the world can't live without if we don't put it out as a separate ED immediately. I think when we come to consulting, through whatever vehicle that is, I'd like to draw out that one of the things we're trying to balance is to help improve the consistency of practice, that I think is mainly questions that arise in respect of non-financial instrument issues. You could argue IS-19 and some of the discount rate things teeters on the edge, but you know, non-financial instrument, and we're trying to be cautious to not create problems for IFRS 9, and I think we have to think about the new insurance standard, where we are looking to have people, you know, update their estimates as better information becomes available and not get locked in, and be explicit that we're trying to strike that balance so we get that information of, remember, maybe, you know, you FI guys talk to your non-FI neighbor and vice versa, so we don't get feedback that's siloed. I see the advantage of publishing some examples in terms of saying, supporting why we think this helps, but if so, I would want to make clear that this is only for the purposes of consultation, because I really am concerned about locking in, even as illustrative examples, answers to the questions of, if I have this other step in the table and it must be that. I think that's both too detailed and we maybe haven't thought through all the permutations. So I think helpful to show some analysis to get the input, but I would discourage adding lots of examples to the final. Then one last thing, wording question. Paragraph 18 of the paper on page 7, which is the proposed paragraph 32, you're suggesting adding estimation involves making judgments or assumptions. And I'm just wondering if that, I was struggling a bit with that addition of the word or assumptions, and whether what we're really talking about is selection of inputs. And just want to ask you to go away and think about that, because I don't think drafting at the table is useful. But it struck me because I couldn't really get what we were trying to accomplish with that word. So overall, I think we should do it, and I think we should not. I actually am against asking the staff to do more work at this point. I think we're only going to get limited improvements, and I don't want to overinvest in trying to make limited improvements. So I think you said to us, we've done everything we can to realistically drive some improvements. Either we quit or we go ahead.
Thank you. I agree with the direction that staff is looking at. And I think we should expose it because it would provide a lot of benefit to the lots of constituents. I agree with what Stephen said. However, I also have a sympathy what Martin said and echo what Wego said. Let's forget about accounting jargon. What is the estimate? What is the accounting policy? Let's consider in what situation we should make retrospective presentation. We have to, in what case we have to allow prospective without any knowledge of policy or estimate. So if the economic environment changed significantly, in that case you have to change your estimate or accounting policy to cope with the change of the economic environment. I don't think in that case we should restate, because the economic environment is different. So if you restate, then you will mislead investors, because 10 years ago, economic environment is totally different from current environment. So in order to cope with the current situation, we can allow prospective presentation. However, if the economic environment is totally same, but all of a sudden you think this estimation is better, or this accounting technique is better, or this information is better than that, then in that case, I think retrospective application is necessary. And actually, in many part of our IAS and the other standard, it talks about fact and circumstances. And what I said is, in a sense, incorporated in the current standard. However, the thing is confusing, because in the case of estimate, you can use prospective. In the case of accounting policy, you have to do the retrospective. And the definition is like that. So Because IS is like this, without doing completely rethink of this structure, it is quite difficult to address. So actually, staff is trying to achieve it without changing such a structure to achieve the quick win. So therefore, I appreciate.
I think what you just proposed was completely the opposite of current.
Yeah, policy. Completely opposite. However, what I'm saying is, if we tackle this, it will take a longer time.
I'm glad I understood this correctly, but it is what does that help?
Yeah, so let me suggest what the staff, based on the staff's documents. So paragraph 34. Paragraph 34 is coincidentally same paragraph, 34A, on page 7. So you picked up some points like A, B, C, D, E. And A is fine because the new market developed, the economic environment changed.
It's copied from IFRS 13.
Yeah. A is fine. C is fine. C is fine. And then the B is a little in between. However, E, just a moment.
Conditions change, yes.
Yes. Market condition change is fine. But the point, difficulty is D, estimation technique, variation technique improved. And also, C is, you know, it's a little bit difficult. So I think we can expose it, but in line with what I said. So in order to depict whether or not real economic environment has changed or not, we can use this parameter to judge whether or not the economic environment has changed. So, and also in the your next paper, you said you are not going to require disclosure, but I think we need disclosure. Why you change? Because without having a disclosure, there is no rigor.
Okay, we'll come to that.
Philippe. Thank you. I'm sympathetic with the project direction. I think it's an improvement. I agree that regulators think that we can bring more clarity, and this is helpful. I have a question about the transition effect of this new standard. We have not discussed it, and maybe in taking into account the comments by the staff who think that the effect is not such that we should change accounting, the improvement, can we maybe make it easier for preparers to apply this guidance in saying it's prospective application, don't redo your estimates or don't requalify your past periods as being changed in policies or estimates, leave it as it is and apply this new guidance from the date it is published. I think that would make the application of the standard much easier, would bring benefits without the cost to the preparers, I think. And the other point is wording maybe. You seem to be making a distinction between valuation techniques and estimation techniques. In paragraph 34A, I'm trying to translate that into my language. I'm not sure I can see such a big difference between estimation and valuation techniques, or at least not big enough to need two different sets of words, unless you can explain to me what's so different between estimation and valuation techniques. Because actually it does call for more questions than answers. So do we need to have different things or valuation and estimation? Is it all about estimating something? And you apply a formalized method or something else, but you...
We basically, because different standards use different terminology, that's the main reason we use both. Because IFRS 13 uses valuation techniques and IFRS 7 uses estimation techniques.
What's the difference really in your opinion? There is a difference. So should we enshrine those different words or say, maybe let's pick a word and going forward?
It was another challenge of this project, by the way, is the terminology, because again, it's cross-cutting standard which sets up the principle, but all standards use different terminology and describe their measurement objectives and measurement basis and accounting policies and principles in different ways. And this is fair challenge for this project.
Thanks. Just trying to add something, and you ask specifically about wording. I think, first of all, the issue that the suggestion there gave is very important. We identified the problem at inception of this project, and the problem came together with a number of examples. Let's test the wording against that examples again and see if they really fit into. And I guess this will be very much appropriate. I do agree with many that said that the direction is responsive to what we heard. And we asked about specific wording. I don't think it's really, as Mary said, is the best place for us to provide feedback on the wording on the table, because we are so many, we have different ideas. But just to reinforce 2 points on the wording, I do agree with Sue's suggestions. I had exactly the same. I think they are quite important. And as for wording, from paragraph 32 to 35, two general comments. The first one is in paragraph 34A. I would suggest splitting it, because actually the first sentence is a definition of what is a change in accounting estimate, and the second sentence is situations where it's appropriate to have the change in account in estimates in general. So I would suggest splitting this. I think it's better. And when it comes to I had exactly the same point as Philippe on estimation techniques and valuation techniques, and I do understand we use both terminologies. I think we should, otherwise of we instead of developing a new terminology, I would use both terminologies, because we do have the terminologies in our literature. However, because of that, I would review paragraphs 32, 33, 34, and 35 to use the same terminology. And I'll give you an example. In paragraph 32, the new sentence, the second sentence that we are suggesting, entities may need to use accounting estimates. Actually, we had to cross accounting estimate, use the same terminology. Technique estimates or valuation techniques, and then use the same terminology down the paragraph. So of course I can provide what I meant offline, but the direction I think it's the right one.
Can I just comment on that? Because in that added sentence in 32, I think the use of the term accounting estimates is extremely important, because that was the defined term.
Yeah, but this is not allowed. Sorry, but this is not allowed with the word in paragraph 34. In paragraph 34, we talk about estimation techniques and valuation techniques in applying their accounting policies. This is the right one. We do not talk about using accounting estimates. We use estimation techniques and valuation techniques in applying accounting policies. We don't use the terminology, we use accounting estimates.
Maybe we'll take it offline, but I guess yeah. The intention and 30.
Well, the intention is clear, it's just align the terminology.
No, it's extremely important that it refers to accounting estimates here. Because
No. What's important to have accounting estimates in the very end, and the very last sentence in 32. For example, accounting estimates may be required of. This is the important. It's missing accounting estimates in the last sentence. For example, accounting estimates may be required of. But in the previous one, it's not accounting estimates, it's estimate techniques or valuation techniques.
Just ask you a very quick question, Amara. When you said to test the revised language against specific examples, did you mean that as a, if you like, a staff exercise?
Because a staff exercise.
I'm quite wary about there.
Yeah, as suggested by But there, I found that quite important not to miss that.
A couple of things. Firstly, I think the distinction between accounting policies and estimates is, I'd keep it, and I think it's quite important for the reasons that Steve gave. I think it's useful to have a default. We on a standard-by-standard basis, make different decisions about retrospective, prospective, and restatement or not, etc., but I think the model works quite well. I think that there's really a few things we need to test when we go out with this in, for a comment. And I think that it's both for preparers and audit firms and regulators, will it make the distinction clearer? Because I agree that was sort of the starting premise. So is the application going to be easier? But I think we also need to understand whether or not by changing the words we're moving the line and where we're moving the line. And I think that input then is important to discuss with the users, because they may get different sets of information because of these changes in words. So I almost wonder whether it would be helpful to test examples in the exposure draft, in the sense of, would you classify this as a change in accounting policy and estimate based on the old words and the new words and why, so we get maybe a sense of the line moving. That's just an idea. In terms of exposure, I think I support going ahead and getting comments on this. But I wouldn't, I agree we need to think about the form in which to do that, but I wouldn't put it in the annual improvements for me, because it's way more important than what I would label an annual improvement, because of the potential consequences for people. I think they're huge, and we need to be sure of what the effect is of what we've proposed. So I would think about something like, I don't know, maybe putting it out at the same time as the principles of disclosure discussion paper, even if it was in a different document, bundling it together so at least people are thinking about disclosure-related things at the same time, or maybe being a little bit creative. I don't want to wait forever if there's nothing else we're doing with IAS 8 in the near term, but I'm not sure. I wouldn't put it in annual improvements. I think it sends the wrong signal in terms of the importance of the issue.
Can I comment on the suggestion about examples, and including examples in the exposure draft? I think there are a couple of downsides to that. I think one downside is that if we put examples in and say that what we're doing here is trying to clarify the distinction, and for whatever reason we then don't go ahead, I think we risk creating a perception that there's some lack of clarity at the moment about some of those examples. And I think we would think most of them actually are pretty clear. So I'd worry that we might be signalling some uncertainty that we don't think exists in the existing words already. My second worry about the examples is that the two ones that are addressed in the paper are the ones that have come up most often in these discussions. And at the moment, just to be clear, we're not proposing to put those in the ED. They're there for your information, so you can decide whether you think it's useful to include them. To my mind, those two are completely useless as examples, because they won't generalise to any other situation. They depend so much on the facts of those particular standards. All they do is give you the answer we think you get to in that standard based on those very specific words in those standards, and they won't generalise at all well to anything else. Now, of course, we could provide a much longer list of examples, and if you look at the UK standard FRS 18, there's quite a long list of examples there. I'm not sure if it's in the standard or implementation guidance or something, but it's quite a long list, really. And do we really want to go down the route of having lots of examples for things that are probably clear to most people already anyway?
Sorry. The example which I would be interested in the staff thinking about, which is the one that I'm aware of that I found the trickiest to think about, was in the context of fair value measurement. When we were explicit on the need to consider own credit in the measurement of a financial liability, it was always a measurement objective of fair value measurement, but by being clear about the own credit component, there was a huge debate, I know, about whether that was a change in accounting policy or a change in accounting estimate. That would be a good one to look at in the context of your new words to see if you think it would be clear where you'd go and if you'd agree where you'd land.
First of all, on the examples, Peter, in my mind, you know, there's no need for us to put those examples, the answers so clear cut, you know, there's no need. But for those tricky examples, this is the ones for the people, and this is why the issue bring to us. I think some examples, you know, more examples will be useful. Even I personally feel among board members, from the previous discussion, I got impression. Obviously, board members have different perceptions on something. Some examples, whether it is a changes in accounting estimates or changes in accounting policy. And if even among board members, we have different views, how we can propose something to let people understand, we could be more clearer, more better principles. I don't think it is appropriate.
And secondly, back to what Sue suggests, bring back other practice. Please look at paragraph 17. So staff proposed to eliminate, delete basis, conventions, rules, and other practices. This is big changes, I assume. And then Sue said, you know, we should add back other practice. I got feelings we really change or not change. I'll give you one example. You know, in my previous life, you know, I view changing from, for example, amortized cost to fair value, or vice versa, are changes in accounting basis. Therefore, it is changing the accounting policy. If we eliminate basis, and people come back to us, a case like the one I just described, ask us, you know, whether it is changes accounting principles, it changes accounting estimates. We may say it, we may clearly say it, it is changes accounting policy. But they say that no, you changed recently the definition of changes accounting policy and eliminated the basis. Obviously, in this case, if the changes accounting basis, measurement basis, you eliminate. This is the one concern from them. And second of all, let me finish.
This relates to your point.
I give the floor to
Nadia.
Hold on. I give the floor to Nadia.
I would like to respond to one that measurement basis are not defined anywhere in IFRS. They used occasionally, I think, only in two places in ISA. Therefore, by eliminating measurement basis from the definition, we haven't lost out on anything. Measurement basis are not used in IS-16 or any other standards. So we did consider very, very carefully taking out anything.
But Weigo's point is rather, which is why I think it's important it's not an annual improvement, is if people had convinced themselves before they only got in there because they were using the word basis, by deleting the word, does that change the way they should be thinking about it? That's all the
yes,
that's what will happen in practice.
Yes. And second, if we all agree, Sue's suggestion to bring back, add back other practices. But then, if the practice is based on conventions of the industry, so we eliminate the convention. So I'm not sure whether we really change or not change.
Terminology.
No, not terminology. At least we agree among ourselves.
I had a similar observation, and my observation was the language the OIC proposed, Leonardo, is more or less along the lines of what Weigo just suggested, but yet you said you rejected it because if you look at paragraph 8, it says in May of 15, they proposed that a change in measurement basis would be a change in accounting principle. But your language strikes measurement basis, so...
Because it's meant to be incorporated in principle is the idea.
That's correct.
Well, is that clear, though? Is it clear? I don't think it's clear. Then I think what makes it
we are not changing paragraph 35 of IC. Paragraph 35 states, a change in the measurement basis applied is a change in accounting policy. So this is already clear.
Mm. Yeah, but then, you know, you eliminate the basis and bring back the basis, you know.
Your revised language isn't clear, though. It just says it's principle.
Not changing this paragraph.
I'm looking at the clean text.
It's clean. We are not changing this.
You have to go further
on. We could never change anything if we were to take that approach, right? But you're right. We need to test whether people would read principles the way we intend to capture those other things that we've...
Yeah, I said among ourselves.
I would accept they shouldn't have read basis to begin with, but that's like...
Gary.
I'm hoping this is a quick one, and maybe it's stating the obvious, but I think one of the most common, I'll call it, types of accounting policy changes when you go from an immaterial activity, it becomes material. So, for example, think of warranty obligations. You account for them on a cash basis. Become material, you start accruing for them. You know, cash to accrual is a policy change. But if it's going from immaterial to material, I think a sentence to the effect of we view that as more a change in fact and circumstances rather than a change in accounting policy would be useful. I think the materiality principles practice statement says that, I think it's worth repeating in here, because that happens all the time.
Chang Wu?
Thank you. I agree with that, that proposal. However, in a long-term sense, maybe Dear Martin, the suggestion might be a very good idea to think about. But in the short-term practical solution, this will be a very good practical solution. However, you know, in, if you see the last page of 25A, you provided two testing examples. But there, if you see the paragraph C8, that's a page 22, your conclusion, your application of a new definition of changes in accounting policy, you are saying, consequently, the accounting result, blah, 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 and therefore, the decision on which cost formula to use is not based on attempt to estimate the actual flow of the inventories. So your decision is that this is a selection of the accounting policy. However, based on new definition, accounting policies are specific principles. That principles sometimes ask us to estimate the actual flow, or sometimes they are asking the approximate some kind of flow. So I'm saying, you know, maybe we need maybe more testing, more examples, and also when we develop some kind of a justification logic that applies the new definition of this kind of specific examples, then might be we'll be consistent with their new definition and their application. So, because you know some people are might not happy with this kind of a logical flaw. So that's what I'm suggesting, you know, think about carefully.
Thank you, Chinko. I guess we have to go to question two.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, we haven't voted yet.
Oh.
Mm. The general sense from the discussion is, first of all, that there is, it has again been demonstrated that there is no such thing as making simple changes to accounting. and secondly, that there have been, I think there's more support than not for continuing with this approach. There have been suggestions for wording and testing, and staff should take those on board. There was also a suggestion by Sue on exposure. When I first saw this, I thought, well, yes, of course, this should go to annual improvements, but given the discussion, that's probably not the best idea. But then I certainly think it should be batched with something else. And perhaps the disclosure, principles of disclosures document is a good idea.
So I guess we're opting on question two, we're opting question 2BA, develop these recommendations further.
But we do want to go ahead.
Yep.
This says if we should not go ahead,
no,
should
no,
we?
No, no.
We'll expose, but we
basically respond to all questions.
Sorry.
No. They say, we go ahead and expose it.
We've answered all the questions.
Gives enough for answer everything.
We've addressed every question.
Yes.
I'm not sure we've answered it.
Yeah, we addressed every question.
But what the staff should research, we all made a very good point about, you know, people attach as much value as to what we delete as to what we keep and don't change or change. So you have to keep that in mind in developing your proposals, that, you know, if it's not the idea that change of measurement basis is a change in estimate, that, then I don't think that's the idea, then it has to be made clear somewhere.
I think.
Is this fair summary of where we are, and,
Paul,
and
where
we don't, I don't think we need to get into all the...
Prepare an exposure draft, but expose it with something else, is that...
Yeah, but not annual improvement.
Seems like a while.
Develop further and bring it to...
And not an annual improvement.
No.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think we need to come back to the board on Philippe's question about transition. I think that's a good question. I don't think we've addressed that yet.
But if put into disclosure initiative, discussion paper, it is so urgent.
No, I would. I don't think we were suggesting it would be in the DP, but rather the timing was concurrent. Was the suggestion?
Two separate documents in the same time.
But let's not kick this in the long grass again, like so many other things.
Yeah.
Let's do this.
We did actually propose to separate this project from the disclosure initiative. Anyone would object to this proposal? It just has a life of its own, and we just thought it would be better to manage, because otherwise we're always tied up and people get confused in terms of what it is that we're trying to achieve on the bigger project.
I wonder if we're actually issuing it at the same time as the principles of disclosure discussion paper, whether actually formally taking out of the disclosure initiative might just confuse people, and whether we
just keep
it. I mean, it's our own process, really, whether it's part of the disclosure initiative or not. So
I guess it depends whether or not we think it needs to go, because if we put it in the discussion paper, I'm not sure we could then go to final, whereas if we keep it at least in a separate document.
It would have to be a separate document, I think. I don't think you could put it into the discussion paper. I think what we'd be saying is that you publish it at the same time as the principles of disclosure discussion paper. At the moment, this project is formally under the disclosure initiative, and I think all we're saying is that we won't formally take it out of the disclosure initiative.
Certainly not if we're going to batch it with something in the disclosure initiative.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. 25B.
I made the introduction earlier.
Yep.
Shall we go straight to the questions on page 7? So it's basically about adding more disclosure requirements to ISA. For changes in accounting estimates. And we currently propose not to add disclosure requirements. Because, as I again explained earlier, it's not just IS 8 that deals with changes in accounting estimates. There are many other IFRS standards that deal with the same topic, and they have their own disclosure requirements. So we believe that on a combined basis, there was sufficient volume of disclosure requirements as it is, and by adding anything new, tweaking ISA, it wouldn't add that much substance, basically.
Agree?
No.
I disagree. Sorry, I disagree. We should require some disclosure about change of variation technique, because only the change of the variation technique is not really the estimation change. As I explained before, in the case the situation has completely changed, and then it is rational. It is okay to change the estimate and then change the accounting number, but without recognizing any environmental change or any factor and circumstance change. If we only change the variation technique and change the number, it really confuses users. And also, we require it in the IFRS 13, paragraph 65. So then, if we require in the 34A, also we have to look at what the 34A is all about. However, if you include the variation technique change in the as part of the estimate in the 34A, in that case, I think we should require disclosure.
Hans, may I ask a question on that? If you look at page 5 of paper 25B, if I'm reading the table correctly, it seems like the difference in disclosure between IFRS
13
and IAS 8 with respect to a change in estimate, which is how we would classify a change in
just changes in estimation evaluation techniques. They're both changes in estimates.
Yeah, that's fine.
So if you look at it, the difference is in the final box, the reason for the change.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when I compare it, in some ways ISA requires more disclosure about that than specifics of 13.
Right.
So it would be missing talking IS, you know, if you were looking just at IS 8, is the reason for the change. And I think what the staff was saying is you're likely to get boilerplate in response to that because it provides more useful information. But you would get a, you know, you would get a flag that this change had occurred based on the existing requirements. Do you want more than what ISA
wants? My underlying concern is to changing variation technique without any change of fact and circumstances, without change of economic environment, it could lead a misleading number. So therefore, if you want to change that technique, I think you should provide the reason why.
So you want a justification provided for
the change. Without any justification why you changed the accounting technique,
Is it trying to address this specific issue in paragraph 17 of the paper? And we believe on balance that ISA already requires to disclose the nature of the change and the amount of the change. And as the paper also says in paragraph 17, changes in evaluation or estimation techniques almost never happen in isolation. So if you change an estimate, you change an estimate for many reasons. It might be discount rate, assumption, life just changed, plus you changed valuation and estimation. It's always a bundle of changes. And as Zephyrus Putin explained actually as well. And some bundle of the change, single out this change in valuation and estimation technique, it seems to be asking people too much, as respondents to IFRS 13 said. But the way IFRS 13 dealt with this issue, it did require to disclose the reasons for the change in evaluation and estimation. But then it exempted people from other disclosures in ISA. So
it's
not simple.
Overlap. Are you talking about there is overlap? So then it's not really necessary. Is that what you're saying?
No, it was pointing out that essentially, having added this thing in the last box, they gave relief for box 2 and box 3.
Right. So,
give with one hand.
Right. So, that if you put it, it's in a sense overlap, and it's too much.
Martin?
I would also support TAC, because that was also my earlier point. I don't see any difference, because if somebody is changing, let's assume, estimating expected losses, and comes from a method which said, okay, I'm coming up maybe by my own judgment with, okay, what is the probability of a future event, and moving now to a Monte Carlo simulation, and has an impact on the number. And this impact is a certain number. And why is that different from a change in, I think, policy if somebody comes from average cost to LIFO and no new effects and circumstances changes? Clearly, what Stephen has said earlier, if you have new, in accounting, you always do new estimates, inputs, whatever. But if it is a change in valuation measured, and that is your point and was my point, I don't see why we distinguished between really change in estimate and change in policy. Because I think it is the same, and what is really relevant is, because it is not an impact on the number based on new information on economic development. It is only a change in the number because you have changed a new method. And I think that is important for users to know and differentiate that from really what is a change in number from an economic development. And therefore, I think, and that was my earlier point, we doing the wrong cut here. And that,
so are we going now to restart the discussion?
Not to restart, but I think that was TAC's point in disclosure, and I think that was my only earlier point, because I think that is the main issue.
I agree with the staff's recommendation, because I think in cases, we've already got general requirements in 8, but in addition, where it really matters, like in places like IFRS 13 in the ECL world, and I hope when we get to insurance, because it's so important, I agree, it should be information should be provided, but we craft specific stuff that's fit for purpose in its context. So it's not that we're not giving the information, it's rather it's been designed for the specific circumstances.
Okay, can I see who supports the staff recommendation?
12, in fact.
Okay, thank you, Nadia, Leonardo. Then April.